indicated that we would perhaps say a few words of storytelling about our experiences and bring back some blessings. Well, whatever words I might say are not really the blessings that I would hope I would bring back, because words are hardly the vehicles for such means. Rather, I hope I can bring back a renewal, a refreshment, and a deeper appreciation of our calling, of our consecration, and of the great work that the Lord is doing amongst His people. Because certainly this trip did reinforce that very fact, that the Lord is moving, the Lord is stirring amongst His people, even though they might be in very primitive, isolated, and almost forgotten situations and conditions. But the Lord's arm is not shortened, and He can reach anywhere and provide the necessary means and help and blessings to their encouragement and their ultimate support. So if that assurance and that certainty can be more grasped by me and understood and more fully used in my own personal experiences, I say that my behavior, my conduct, and my faith being deepened might be the best report that I can give to you. All I can do now is just to tell you in these feeble words what happened to us in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And I must say I thank the Lord upon every memory of those days, because indeed they were very precious. We missed you, and we want you to know that you were in our prayer and in our thoughts. A few of you received cards. I wish we could have been more punctual, perhaps, and more consistent about sending more. But I hope you'll understand that if you didn't hear from us physically, the Lord certainly heard from us spiritually about you and your welfare as well. So while we were absent, it wasn't as though you were not present with us. You were in thought and in prayer. After the Orlando Convention, it was a sweet one, although rather brief for us. We drove down and got there just the second day, and we were kind of weary, so we didn't get too much of that. But the following day was awfully refreshing and stimulating. Bernard, I'm sure, may have reflected some of that in his fellowship with you in the last weeks, as he shared it as well. And then that, after which we went down to Miami. And you might ask, well, what was the purpose of this visit? Why do you go all those miles, especially one who doesn't understand the language? I don't know Portuguese, I don't know Spanish. I'm such a poor hand at any other foreign language, and my English sometimes is atrocious. Why go? Well, I tell you, it was the opportunity to go, and we made that decision somewhat at the last moment. There was a group going, and we felt a desire to see what our brethren in South America are like and what they are encountering, just as we had the desire 6 years ago to see what our brethren in Nigeria were like and what they were encountering, and seeing what is the Lord's moving in the lives of some of these dear ones. And we were privileged to join into a select company. And that, I think, was one of the main spin-offs of blessing, because not only was it a blessing to visit with the brethren whom I did not know in South America, but I tell you, it was as equal, if not a greater blessing, to deepen my visits and to deepen my association and my appreciation of my brethren whom I have known through the years. And there were seven of us who started on that trip, six of us who started on the trip, and we met in Miami. There was Sister Marjorie Parkinson. There was Sister Marjorie Hagensick and Carl Hagensick. There was Rhoda Larson, who is studying intensively the Spanish language and preparing to be a remedial teacher in Spanish. And then ourselves. In Buenos Aires, in Rio de Janeiro, we did meet up with Brother Leo Post, and he was with us for the remainder of the journey. And I tell you, meeting and being with those five brethren was one of the greatest blessings of the entire trip. Because we were together for 2 solid weeks, We were together in all circumstances, riding in a crowded van for 11 hours straight, being in hot conditions, being up until 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, coming into a hotel and sleeping 3 hours, and then going out to the next leg of our journey, and being somewhat cramped. And yet to have the sweetness and to see the beauty of their characters and to rub together with them in the finest sense of that word, with the Holy Spirit being so evident, it was such a rich experience. Well, we meet together here, brethren, you know, for 3 or 4 hours at a time and sometimes all day, but yet it is not quite the same as a 2-week concentrated buffeting experience, and you see the beauties of character. I was so deeply impressed, and I just loved my brethren all the more because I could see in them such richness and such beauty and the sparkling of the way in which they so love the Lord, and they just subordinate everything else to that one aim and that one desire. We came into Rio de Janeiro. That was our first stop after leaving Miami, and we immediately came into a hotel and had a few hours to spend before we were to take another flight out. And we did a little sightseeing around the city. You may think of South American countries as being somewhat somewhat primitive, somewhat behind the times, but not so. Rio was as polluted and even more so than anything we have around here. It was a hustle and bustle a city of 3 or 4 million people, and they have all of the problems that we have here. They have their crime, they have their traffic congestion, they have their slum areas, they have all that you can name. And as we could see the conditions abroad there, we realized how it was necessary that in the workings of God's kingdom, that we all have to be, those who will be the more than overcomers, we'll have to be experts on urban planning. We'll have to know how to control and how to provide and how to help people in every such conditions, because the conditions are so much the same throughout the world. I felt almost as though I had not left America. The only thing that was different was the language, the billboards, and the problems of communication. But even there, I did not feel too much as though I were in a strange place. We then left immediately for a flight and went to Belo Horizonte. It was about a flight of maybe 3/4 hour. We went to Belo Horizonte for one purpose. A minister had been writing to the Don asking for first volume copies in Spanish, in Portuguese, I'm sorry. Pastor Guamaras Moreas. He, in a very interesting way, had gotten into a dialogue with someone else on the on one of the public transports, and he had some ideas about the kingdom. And as he was talking to someone else who did not accept that position, he was overheard by a third party. And when the conversation stopped, the third party said to this minister, "You sound as though you must have read the Divine Plan of the Ages." And the minister said, "I never heard of it. How do I get a copy of it?" And this party gave him a tract. And he sent that tract into the Don, got a copy of the Divine Plan of the Ages in Portuguese. I was so enthused with it that he was now distributing it, and he was asking for dozens of copies, distributing it to his little congregation as well as to others in the area of Belo Horizonte. And it was interesting to find out who that brother was that introduced him to the Divine Plan. We went to Belo Horizonte, and we got there about 9 o'clock at night because the plane was late. And after a rough and tumble drive throughout that area, we got there finally, and they were in session. The little minister, I'd say a young chap around 30, 35 years of age. Congregation was rather small, but there they were in that little upper room. It was just like an office, and they were singing lustily, and when they sing in South America with a guitar accompaniment, they really sing with their hearts. And that is why I think Pentecostal faith has made such inroads there, because they emphasize music. And music is a part of their heritage. And when they sing, they bellow, and it's melodic. And they really mean it. And we just came, and they were so hospitable and open. And I will say this, that the cornerstone and the key to any such effort in South America is understanding the language and interpreting the language and translating the language. And the cornerstone to our whole visit there was Sister Marjorie Hagensick. I have grown in such appreciation for that dear sister. And I know now why Carl is able to do so much. Carl is the most traveled man, I think, in the history of the gospel age. I really believe that if he makes his coin election sure, I'm sure that St. Paul and I'm sure that Pastor Russell will say, well, Brother Carl, you have covered more territory, you've been in more areas and been traveling greater distance than we have. Because for over 40 or 45 years, it has used the most modern means of transportation, circling the globe in 30 different countries, meeting brethren there, and just crisscrossing this continent weekly. But he cannot do that, I can see now, without the back up and support of that dear wife of his. The old saying is, behind every man, there is a woman. And believe me, it's true in that family as well. Because she was conversing and is conversing fluently in Portuguese, in Spanish, in Polish, in French, and in German. And she was our main link, and she did all of the dialoguing. Carl picks up a word here and there, and he can understand, but the rest of us were just listeners as the interactions were going on. So with her as the translator, we had a message of greetings from the pastor. He thanked us for coming, and he rejoiced in the promise of the kingdom. He saw the high calling. He recognized the truth about hell. And then he called upon us to give our little statements. And Carl gave a presentation. Leo Post and I did as well, accepting their good wishes and urging them to reinforce their faith in the plan, and pointing them towards the hope of the kingdom, not only for they themselves as members of the high calling, but for the entire world of mankind and the downtrodden of that land of Brazil itself. It was getting late. There were children in the congregation, so we had to kind of adjourn early. When I say early, around 10:30 at night. But there was a nice discussion afterwards with the pastor. He brought us into his little library, and there he had the divine plan, but then he had a lot of other literature as well. Apparently he's just using literature to try to reach out for present what he believes is the gospel, but he says he understands that divine plan very well, and he believes it, and he wants further communication, and Brother Leo Post is being the channel through which the Dawn will be able to funnel additional information. But you see, there's a problem, that in the Portuguese and Spanish languages, only the first volume has been translated. They do not know anything about the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth volumes. So they are accordingly quite limited. The Spanish Dawn, which has been translated now by Aldo Olcisi and by Joseph Panucci before that, has been the main vehicle whereby they've been getting insights into other facets of truth. But we do not comprehend what it must be to be so limited in your reading material. All they have is the Bible and the first volume and some little tracts that might filter down and some little booklets or some very, very fragmentary comments that might be getting into their hands. And when we consider, and this is something that weighed upon me, and we consider how much they did seem to grasp with so little of written material for their edification, it to me reinforces the sustaining, the keeping power of God. Because certainly how they can help some of the concepts that they did articulate, without that it would be impossible for me to understand. It was getting close to, 11:30 or thereabouts when we said goodbye to the pastor. And we rushed up to the hotel. And early the next morning at 6 o'clock, we had to then get up for our next flight. And we went to Blumenau. We went from there to a town called Uberaba. And there was Brother Lazaro Nagwera, who was the one, by the way, who gave that lead to this pastor just by accident, as or by coincidence, as the world would say, but we know by overruling, in that chance meeting at the public, it was in a streetcar, I think it was. And there, because this brother has had some domestic problems, Marge Carleo went to visit the Mai himself. But they were so pleased with his visit and his acceptance. He was a Pentecostal attendant, and he still goes to some of their meetings, but he distributes the divine plan and says, this is the truth. And he's beginning to get, squeezed out, and he senses this. And being a rather older man, he felt there was a need for his further contacting with the brethren, and so he was invited to go down to the convention in Buenos Aires, and his support for that purpose was provided. And it was such a wonderful arrangement, because we could just see how that brother just seemed to blossom out, and he was in tears as he understood, and he got a deeper appreciation of what the brethren were saying, and the fellowship was just something that he says is the greatest thing that's happened to him. And he's just waiting for the next convention in 2 years. And they had a sweet time with him. They said that he was just dried up and waiting for someone to come to just give him a spiritual fellowship. He's in isolation totally, but he says that this I know is the truth. They could only spend about 3 or 4 hours with the brother, and they came back to Belo Horizonte. And then the next morning, we flew out to a little town called Banerio Camboriú. When I say we flew out, we took a flight to the nearest large city, then rented a van, and for about 4 hours, all of us drove through some beautiful Brazilian countryside. Brazil, the southern part of Brazil, is not like the northern Amazon, but this is like the forests, I suppose, what you'd be getting up in Idaho, but not nearly as dense, and more of an enchanted forest appearance, and beautiful mountains, together with beautiful seaside resorts, and right by the water where you get clean, white, sandy beaches. And it is just, I would think, a tourist's mecca, but yet they have very little tourism there, and it's apparently a part of the world that has not been discovered by the average tourist. And considering what the costs are, it is an ideal place to spend some time if one were to look for recreation and for just relaxation. But we then motored down to this town in Balneário Camboriú, which is south of Rio de Janeiro, on the coast. And there was a sister, Lizelle Gramer. Elderly sister, must be, and I'd say, would you say her early 70s, Con? With her husband, Edward, who is not consecrated. But Sister Gramer came from Germany right after the war, World War. And before she was married in Germany, her aunt gave her a set of books in German. And she just put them aside and didn't think anything of them. And when after the war, she decided to emigrate to Brazil, because after the war, many of the Germans were anxious to get out of Europe, and South America was very friendly to Germany. There seemed to have been a strong Nazi element in Argentina as well as in Brazil. And so, even today, there's rumors about many of the Nazi war criminals being given sanctuary in South American countries. And so they were doing homesteading. The government would offer them land in the hinterlands, and if they would come and settle, they would be given this land for their possessions. And so Sister Grandma emigrated into Brazil. When she got there, somewhere along the line, she became ill and was quite sick. And remember that she did bring these books with her because she had a fondness for the aunt, and the aunt had died. And so she thought that she might turn to one of these books for comfort because she knew they were about religion. And she read the first volume, and she kept on reading, and she said at that point she realized what a treasure she had there. And she consecrated herself, even though she was isolated and alone, just because she knew that that had to be the Bible revealed. And it was interesting to note that when we got there, Brother Carl was just counting. Well, you're number 12, you're number 13. Then came to Carmela and said, you're number 14, and I'm number 15. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, you were the 14th and 15th brethren that this sister ever met. And she had been there since the 40s. And only 15, up to the time we were there, only 15 brethren she had ever seen. To give you an idea of what isolation is. Now, Carl has been there, and Sister Marge has been there on four different times. So they were, you know, probably when they got there, I think only one or two other brethren ever contacted Sister Graber. But she's literally just a pepper pot of discussion. She's asking questions all the time, and it was a continual, you know, a non-stop discussion from the time we got there. And also in between, she was just so hospitable. She has a little cottage near the beach, and so she rents that out, and that's the way she makes her income, in addition to the little house that she has. And it was just for that afternoon, evening, and early the next morning when we left, it was just a continual question period about the truth. And again, Marjorie, through her command of German, was able to really clearly enhance the dialogue. Then when we left Sister Grammer, there was another 5 or 6 hour drive to the home of brother and sister Helmut Weiland at a town called Presidente Getulio. And here again was another German couple who had come to Brazil after the war, and who were in their isolation still witnessing to the truth and trying to tell the message as best they could. And also there emerged, as we were talking, he brought out a stack of letters, and he said, this has been my lifeline. And we asked what he meant. He showed there that he had been in correspondence with Sister Asa Dorfman. Those of us at the International Convention met Sister Asa Dorfman. This Sister Dorfman got the name of both Sister Grammer as well as Brother Weiland, and she has been corresponding with them once a week. She would send a letter. And these were letters that were not one pages, that they were several pages long. And she said that that correspondence was just that lifeline that just seemed to be the contact with the outer world and a spiritual line of communication. It just impressed upon me how the Lord can use whatever means possible to serve his people no matter where they are. And you know, the way this brother saved every letter, going back for years, and piles of letters, you can see that this was his treasure. This was an heirloom for him, and he just thanked God for the means that was employed to reach out to the outside world. You know, we don't know what it is to have that kind of deprivation. And we don't know what it is to really live for these kinds of contacts with our blessing. The next day then we left for a town called Viadutos. And there was Brother Stanislaw Clement Azruski. And he, as the name would suggest, was one who had come from Poland many years ago. And you could see that this brother was a battle-scarred warrior. His hands were just gnarled with arthritis. I've never seen such an inflamed hand before. And you could see that he was in obvious pain. And you can see that he had a very difficult life. When he came to Brazil homesteading, he cultivated this little area that he had. I might say that it was probably the poorest house we were in. outhouse in the back, climbing up a hill. It had been raining, and the place was muddy. It was just slippery. You could hardly climb to the place. It was overgrown. Even though he had his family there, he had his son and his daughter-in-law and his grandchild, and there were other relatives, but you can see that they were living under rather strenuous and rather hard conditions. Here was a brother who came, and being all alone, he witnessed, and he ran afoul of the Roman Catholic authorities, and they persecuted him greatly. And then the power of the Catholic Church seems to be waning in recent years. Now the Jehovah's Witnesses seem to be moving into that vacuum, and his very son is in the Jehovah's Witnesses, and he is trying to counteract that doctrinal difference. But you can see, and the brethren who saw him a few years ago say, that he is getting weary, that the old brother Stanislaw with the fire in his eyes just seems to be kind of fading a bit, and he's tired and he's racked with pain. And so it was good for him to see that there were other brethren, and Brother Leo Post could relate to him in Polish, and so did Margie, so there was more communication with him. You could see that he was really appreciating that someone would come from 6,000 miles away just to take that trip to see him and to encourage him and to ask him if there's any spiritual help that we can be giving unto him. He's getting as much of the literature that is being translated into Portuguese or into Polish as well, and he seems to be grateful for that. But I can tell you that he is not at all disappointed or discouraged. He is still maintaining the fight, realizing he feels that the time is very short, and that if we just maintain our calling and our position, we shall prevail. We came away feeling ourselves, you know, uplifted, rather than trying to give him the helping hand. And that's what we found in each and every stop along the way. It was others that were blessing us, and we would feel the love and the zeal and the sacrifice that they are experiencing. From there, we then had a long journey and got there at about 10, 11 o'clock at night to a town called Curitiba. It was a town of 1 million people. And there was Brother and Sister Fonseca. I think you may have met Brother and Sister Fonseca at Chattanooga last year, the brother from Argentina. He spoke at the General Convention, I understand, and he and his wife were our host and hostess for about 3 or 4 days while we were in Argentina. I'm sorry, in Brazil. He was in Brazil, I'm sorry. And we met the next day on a Sunday for a little mini convention. At that convention, there were 11 Brazilians. They were all from his family, whom he had witnessed and interested in the truth. 11 adults and 5 young adults and or children, and us 7 Americans. So the 18 of us had much of the day in convention. Each of us gave a discourse, Brother Fonseca as well, and there was good fellowship, there was good harmony, there was clear perception of the truth. Brother Fonseca knows the truth, and he believes in the presence and the chronology and the prophecies. He has that understanding, because he understands Polish as well, and therefore the books are available unto him. I can't speak too highly for the hospitality and the sacrificing of these brethren. They are reasonably well off, judging from their homes and from their living circumstances. But yet they are so lavish in just laying whatever they have out before the brethren. And I will say that the Brazilian diet, as well as the Argentinian, is very heavy in protein and in sugar. It seems that they are, Argentina in particular, is a great raiser of cattle and beef, great exporters. And I never had so much filet mignon and so much prime cuts as we had. As a matter of fact, when we came back from South America. We were, for about 2 or 3 days, on a fish diet or a salad diet, because we didn't want to see another piece of filet mignon. Well, I must tell you about the one time we went to one restaurant, and they have what they call a carascaria. And we were the guests again of the Fonsakis. You go into the restaurant, and there is a huge salad bar with all the fixing. And then when you sit down, they have 10 different people, or so it seemed like more, coming around with meats. One had a whole side of beef that was rare, and one had it was well done. Another one had ribs, another one had chicken, another one had lamb, another one had, you name it. They came all around and asking you to have a little bit, all as a part of the meal. And that is fine, I'm sure, for those people who can afford it. But as we went about, we could see that there were many who were not able to afford it. Because they were their shanty towns, they were their places of need, but yet we did not see any of the evidences as we would here. No graffiti, or there was a little bit perhaps in Rio, but there was not the hostility, there was not anger. The people seemed to be very pleasant. They were truthful. I will say this, they are the victims of inflation. When you get there, you have cruzados as their measure of currency, but they're also intermingling that with another currency, which was their prior currency, cruzados, I think what they were called. And you walk around with 100,000 cruzados in your pocket. When I first got there, I thought, oh my, you know, this must be worth something. And when I was at a little stand getting some ice cream, a little boy came up, and he kind of, you know, had out his hand of, you know, something for ice cream. And boy, put my hand in, I picked out 100,000 cruzados. Why, here. The boy looked at it and gave it back to me. You don't know the effect of inflation. What was their currency that was worth something now was devaluated and it was nothing. Now it was replaced by cruzados. And I hadn't the foggiest idea what the connection between the two currencies was like. But it changes so rapidly. For example, when we got into Argentina, I was told that 2 weeks earlier, if I have one of their bills here, their currency is called the Australis, A-U-S-T-R-A-L-E-S, that 2 weeks ago, the Australis was worth 18 Australis to one American dollar. When we got there, it was 42 Australis to one American dollar. And you can just imagine that within 2 weeks, the value of everything they owned was, as related to the dollar, was cut in half. And so when you go to the store, you could buy something that last week was maybe $20 in American money, now it reduced to $10. Now, we don't know what that means to people whose average income is no more than $100, 100 American dollars a month. And when they have to cope against that kind of fluctuation in the value of their currencies, you begin to see the problems that they have. But yet I did not sense the despair, although in Argentina, the young people were all wishing to come up to America, the land of promise. Everybody wants to come into this land where they have opportunity. But the young people seem to feel very desolate, very discouraged. There's no future. They don't see any hope for their country. The politics is just where they just seem to be in a mire, and they don't know how to get out of it. Already you see settling in this disillusionment with government, this feeling that it serves no purpose, that the politicians are all corrupt. And the same seeds of anarchy that we see in our own society here is very much in evidence there. Even though they have a more tighter unit and their value system, I think, is not as degenerate as the one we have in this country. We were at the Fonsakis for 3 or 4 days, and then we took that one day for sightseeing. And we took the plane down to see the Iguazu Falls. This is something which has got 10 times the water flow of Niagara Falls. It is a cataract that is about 2 miles around, And to see that mighty water just pouring off of that was just really fantastic. As all majestic and as awesome as the Niagara Falls is, and you get a real sense of man's nothingness when you stand before some of these cataracts all about you, or when you go into, take the helicopter and go into their chasms almost, you really get the feeling of greatness and the power of the universe and of nature. As a little byproduct, on our way walking back from the falls, Tom and I were able to meet another group that was from America, a group of students from Tennessee, a Bible college in Tennessee. And I can't go into the details, but we had a nice opportunity to witness to them. And Tom Ellen especially had one student whom she was able to give quite a extensive witness to. And I was talking to one of their professors and talking about the signs of the times and the conditions in which we live. And he seemed to be quite receptive. From there we then went down to Buenos Aires. Had to go back from where we were, which was near the Argentinian border, go back to San Paulo, then to Rio, then down from Rio to Buenos Aires. And there we were met by Brother Avo Lupsor and motored out to his home in Monte Grande, a suburb of Buenos Aires. The Lupsors are amazing brethren. They migrated, Brother Avo's father migrated to Argentina before World War II from Romania. And he was a one-man tower of strength. And he witnessed to everybody who could possibly hear and who would hear. And through the years, he was able to bring his own family into the truth, even though Sister, I call Sister Lupsor, she's not consecrated, but she certainly loves the Lord, loves the people, and believes the truth, but did not feel that she would consecrate or should consecrate at this point. But she couldn't have been more hospitable and helpful and generous to the brethren. But Brother Lupsor carried on in his father's tradition, and he is really very, very active. And we had, during those 5 days that we were there, we had visitors coming into the house who were invited by Brother Lupsor, whom he had witnessed to through the years, to come in to ask questions and to fellowship with the brethren from America. And we had one in particular, all morning, a dear, dear, you could just see the earnestness of this young, when I say young, she was in her 30s, this, I'm going to call her sister, who had left the Pentecostal church, who had been attracted recently by the witnesses. And she got in touch with Brother Lupsor because of his business connections. And she heard that there was a difference between what Brother Lupsor believed and the Jehovah's Witnesses. And he's been telling her about these differences and invited her to come in and talk to these brethren from America who could explain it further. And that morning was just a thrill, because you could see how she was absorbing it. You can see how she was so intense, writing it down, asking questions, looking up the scriptures, really was involved in herself, and showed that she really had a depth of appreciation. Then there was another man who came in at the same time, and he also was asking questions about the same doctrines that we were believing in. We covered the waterfront in our discussion with them. And this happened in other days as well. So Brother Lupsor felt that these brethren coming were reinforcing his witnessing efforts on behalf, you know, of the truth. Well, I see our time is just about up. When we got to the convention, and the convention, interesting enough, is that Brother Lupsor, 22 years ago, witnessed to a pastor Ramirez. He is a pastor in the Pentecostal church. And Pastor Ramirez read the first volume and accepted it and was teaching it in the pulpit of the Pentecostal church. As a result, the congregation has been dwindling. 2 years ago, when the first South American convention was convened, it was held in the pushiest hotel in Rio de Janeiro. They got word that there were some members of the congregation that would like to have gone, but they didn't feel welcome there. They didn't have the dress for it. They didn't feel as though this was the place where they could feel comfortable in. Maybe they couldn't get transportation to downtown Buenos Aires. Did I say Rio before? It's Buenos Aires. And so this time, they decided to hold the convention. And when I say they, I mean Brother Joseph Panucci. He was the advance man. He went down there about a week or two before, and he's been involved in pilgrim trips throughout that area during the year. But a week or two before, he went down with Brother Aldo Olcisi. And they made all the arrangements together with Pastor Ramirez. It was decided to have the convention in the church that Pastor Ramirez is having his meetings. It was a rather large-sized Quonset hut. And in the back of the hut, there was a stucco dwelling where they used as a kind of a dining area and the bathrooms. And it was there where the convention was held. It was a convention of 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And at the convention, the brethren from the West spoke, and then we were joined there with Brother and Sister Emil Hersher. They came down with Brother Panucci for the occasion. And so there were 11 from North America, together with about 70 of the South American brethren. The brethren from Brazil, including the Fonsacas and Brother Lazaro, who came down from Ubarata. And then there were children, and there was a Sunday school for the youngsters as well. There were six speakers from the South Americans, and the remainder came from North Americans. Those who spoke in Spanish had submitted their text, and it was translated into English, so we knew exactly what they were saying, although I will say that they didn't always stick to their text. They were ad-libbing along the line. And for those Americans who spoke, they were Spanish. It was translated into Spanish, so that the Spanish brethren had their printed text before them. Some of the subjects that the Spanish brethren spoke on was the mystery of the ages, the high calling, the kingdom of God, and two or three other subjects which I just don't remember from the top of my head. And then the brethren from America spoke on various facets of the truth. We did not feel that we ought to go into the presence at this point because they don't have any preparation for it. And that will have to await the next step when already means are being employed to get them to translate the second volume. I might say this, that they were looking for a computer, and Brother Fonsaca is going to translate the second volume on the computer. One of the sisters, one of the daughters of Brother Luxor, is coming to Chicago this year, and she will be spending 6 months translating, using the equipment that is in Chicago, translating it into Spanish, the first volume into Spanish. So there are means, the second volume I should say, into Spanish. There are means underway to try to get this material to these brethren so that they can get a rounded picture of the present truth. They've got a good foundation, they got a good idea of the divine plan of the ages, they got that first volume down fairly well. There is a little bit of apprehension. They emphasize singing a lot. There's a lot of emotionalism in with it. They raise their hands and they sometimes clap as they do so. And there's some of our brethren who are somewhat more conservative, traditional. It looks a little bit like nominalism. Well, we must remember that there are cultural differences, that each of us have our own backgrounds, and we've been growing up with various patterns, and we ought to be a little bit understanding and not feel that we have a mold and everybody must fit into that mold. There is a little question as to how much now that Pastor, I call him Pastor, say Brother Ramirez spoke, and he gave a pretty good talk on the high calling and the kingdom. He says he's convinced about the kingdom. He's convinced that there's no hell, there's no hellfire, no immortality of the soul. He's going to go right down the line on that. And he seems to have a good, you know, solid base on which to build. I see my time has passed, so I must stop here. We really felt, as we left them, we really felt that there was an island of faith there, and that they are searching, looking for a deeper appreciation. They know that there's so much more in God's Word than that they have been privileged to know heretofore. They seem to be reaching out that this is the answer, and they're looking at their scriptures. They came with Bibles, and they were looking up the references as they were cited. They weren't casual. They weren't simply coming because of curiosity. You could see that there was a depth there, and the fellowship between the meetings. I couldn't understand them, and they couldn't understand me, but I tell you, brethren, when these brethren grab a hold of you and hug you, you really know it. And they mean it. I mean, there is no artificiality. It's a genuineness. You cannot help but sense their depth of sincerity. And so, I came away feeling that the Lord has others, you know, in his own little garden spots, giving them the need to strengthening and giving them all the help that is required. And in his own way, he will enable them to do whatever work he has for them. And so I would ask that as you